Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, this East Meadow, Long Island native won a World Series MVP and a Cy Young. He was a two-time 20-game winner, including for the Mets, and he was a Mets minor league pitching coach for some time. Frank Viola, welcome to Glad to Have Met You.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
First off, I got to ask you, Frank, do they still call you Sweet Music?
They do. I think that nickname, that was a pretty good nickname Chris Berman gave me years ago, and it stuck. And I kind of like the sound of it, and fortunately people still recognize me enough to be able to remember it and call me it, and it's fun to hear.
I didn't realize it was a Chris Berman brainchild, so I guess you're one of many beneficiaries from him in the nickname department.
Absolutely. You know, it started out, honestly, it started out as 101 Strings. And then a couple of old ladies saw an article in the paper in Minneapolis that said Viola plays Sweet Music against the Tigers or something. And honest to God, they called Chris Berman. This is before cell phones. They called the ESPN studio, talked to Chris, and said, we have a better nickname for Viola. And Chris proceeded to call me up and ask me which one I like better. And I said, Sweet Music sounds good. And we stuck with that. And it's been with me for 30 years now.
Wow. So Berman let you pick?
He did.
That's funny. So switching gears, you had open heart surgery about 5 years ago. Let me ask you before we go any further, how are you doing physically?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Kind of scary. It was a spring training, and took off physicals with the players. A couple days later, I got a phone call back from the trainers. I had been sent down to the minor league side to start working with the minor leaguers. They said that they needed to see me on the big league side, so I'm thinking I'm going to throw batting practice or something. And I get over there, they put me in the back office, and they say, we see something wrong with your EKG. We need to do an echo. And I went back and got an echocardiogram, and a few days later, they told me back in the office, shut everything down. We're sending you to New York. We're going to have emergency surgery because I had an enlarged aorta. So fortunately, thank God, somebody, Dr. Inra, who was a team doctor, saw this on just a simple EKG and followed up on it, had it taken care of, and as we speak, I'm doing better than ever. Thank you.
Well, you mentioned the word scary. I would imagine there are many things scarier in the medical world that one can undergo than being told you need open heart surgery. What was that like?
It was scary, you know, especially family-wise and stuff like that. You know, I had young kids, grandkids, you know, all of a sudden thinking about not being there for them, it kind of, you know, it's a wake-up call, you know, and basically what the enlarged aorta is if you picture a balloon being blown up and getting to the point where it explodes, that's what my aorta was at that point where it was ready to explode. So I had to go in there and get it back to normal size and then tape it to hit the rest of my life with the certain gauze. And, you know, as I said, I was very, very fortunate. They took care of it. Now I'm enjoying every day, you know, every day more than ever, and enjoying this baseball life I have now, and especially enjoy the family. They're growing up, and I'm watching them all grow, and that's the best part about the whole thing.
Well, great to hear. And speaking of family of sorts, unfortunately, your college coach, the St. John's legend Joe Russo, recently passed away. He was very instrumental with you, to say the least. What do you remember most about Coach Russo?
Well, first of all, you know, Coach Russo gave me an opportunity that a lot of people don't know the story, but I only had two Division I scholarship offers. And I actually only had one. The first one I went to was Seton Hall, and he never actually offered me a scholarship. And then I was pitching in a high school game after St. John's came back from the College World Series in 1978, and Russo was in the stands, and he was scouting the other pitcher, John Morris, who had a nice major league career himself. And I pitched a real good game. At the end of the game, he came up to me, introduced himself, said, I got something that you might enjoy. I got a scholarship available for you, and would you be interested? And the rest is history. I went to St. John's, and Coach Russo gave me the ball every fifth day, and he put me in the position to get drafted and have the career I had. So very, very thankful for the opportunity he gave me, and I really enjoyed my 3 years at St. John's, and that was the same time that Johnny Franco won. So, you know, the two of us have been lifelong friends because of that.
Yep, big Mick connection there over at St. John's. Well, here's something else that I had forgotten, and many may not realize as well, Frank. You actually began your career with the Twins, your first 2 years combined, going 11-25 before you turned things around. Do you think that slow start maybe has made you more patient yourself as a pitching coach?
Not really. I'll put it this way. If I was with any other major league organization other than the Minnesota Twins, I would have been back down in the minor leagues. The Twins being as bad as they were and having an owner of a family-owned business whose president believed in me more than anybody. Calvin Griffith was the one who kept me in the big leagues and let me learn in the big leagues. If it wasn't for that, I would not have had the career I had. I really believe that. But that being said, I also expect a lot out of myself. When I'm told something, I want to, you know, I want to have it done right away. The thing that really opened my eyes as far as patience, and as you mentioned, the question you asked is, I did 10 years of high school baseball. And at that level, if you don't have patience, you lose the boys. And that's when I had to take a step back and realize, you know what, you might have to tell them 5, 10, 100 times. You might always have to tell them every single day of their life of something, and you have to be patient in doing it. Otherwise, you're not going to have any chance of having them succeed.
Well, of course, you went on to greatness as the 87 World Series MVP with those Twins. You wound up winning 2 games in the World Series for them that year, including Game 7 against the Cardinals. And then in 88, the following year, you win that Cy Young, going 24-7. So how about being both a World Series MVP, Frank, and a Cy Young winner? Not many can say they won both of those.
No, that's pretty special. You know, at the time, the thing that people ask me what my most special moment is in baseball, and that was running in the pile after the last out in the seventh game of the World Series, because baseball is meant to be a team game. It's supposed to be celebrated as a team, and that's what we did. You know, after my career was over and after you could sit back and realize what I had accomplished, that's when the Cy Young really took effect and you're like, wow, that was one special year. But that being said, if it wasn't the guy scoring 6.5 runs or the guys making all the plays behind me, it would not have been 24-7. So those 2 years were very special. And the funny part about it is, two of my 3 kids were born on those years. In 87, Brittany, and in 88, my daughter Kaylee were born. So my 3 best years out of the 4 that I really, really had great years was after each of my kids were born. So I think that had something to do with it, too.
And, of course, your kids went on to become great athletes in their own right. Now, you get traded to the Mets in 89 in that Rick Aguilera deal. You go 20-12 in 1990, but it's amazing, Frank, even today, looking back at that starting rotation in 1990 for the Mets, yourself, Doc Gooden, David Cone, Ron Darling, and Sid Fernandez, and yet you guys finished second to the Pirates in the division, so no playoffs pre-wild card. I mean, the funny thing, too, is that, of course, if that rotation were around today, it would probably cost about $200 million in salary, but how about that?
You look back, and that was the 1 year that I think all of us would have liked to have had over. You're right. Not only the pitching rotation, but the lineup that we put out there every day. It was just, you know, you put us against, you know, head to head against the Pirates. They had the Bonds, Vance Leick, Bonilla, Drabeck, but they didn't have anything, you know, much else. I think what they had that really helped them tremendously was they had Jim Leland as their manager. And, you know, sometimes a manager, as Tom Kelly, makes a difference with the Minnesota Twins. Sometimes a manager does make a difference in a 162-game schedule. So, you know, do you believe in him? Do you believe in what he says? And, you know, it just happens. 1990, I think we lost Davey. I think Davey got fired or along those lines. And then Buddy took over Harrelson. So, you know, we were in flux a little bit with the managing situation. But, you know, we had nobody to play for us. Between the white lines, we just did not play as a team, and Pittsburgh did, and that's why they beat us. But it is a shame because you're right, that talent we possessed was crazy.
Well, you signed with the Red Sox in 92 as a free agent. Your last year was 96 with the Blue Jays, and then eventually as a coach, you reached AAA with the Mets. How come that relationship ended?
I really don't know. You know, I had 8 years with them. At the end of the year last year, they decided that they were not going to renew me, and no reason given. You know, so, you know, your guess is as good as mine. But, you know, that's baseball. It happens. I appreciate the 8 years I had. I met a lot of wonderful kids. I'm rooting for them every day in the big leagues, the Matzes, the Syndergaards, the Groms, you know, Lugos, Kisame. I go on a whole bet rotation, 20, 25 other kids out in the other teams in baseball that I've had my hand on, that we've all had our hands on. It's just a great, great feeling to be able to have success and see these kids being successful. But, you know, it happens. The game, you make changes for whatever reason. And it actually worked out well for me because, you know, I'm sure you'll get into it. But as right now, I'm doing my first stint of indie ball. And I'm actually having a blast doing it. I'm getting to live at home for the first time during a baseball season. So, you know, for all the negatives that you could hear, there's a lot of positives involved too, and I'm involved in that right now.
I'm going to ask you about that in a moment indeed. First off, you mentioned some of the guys that you worked with in the minors. When you talk about Jacob deGrom, Noah Syndergaard, Zach Wheeler, and Steven Matz, of course, Matt Harvey was around for a while as well, but focusing right now on those four that are still with the Mets, it seems like other than DeGrom, who even himself has had some ups and downs so far this year, seems like the other three still trying to find themselves consistently, Frank. I don't know how often you get to see them, but you have any thoughts from afar on what's going on?
Honestly, you know, I'm not watching them like I used to, especially when I was coaching in the organization. You know, there's a number of reasons why people fail, why people succeed. You know, a lot of that might have nothing to do with baseball itself. It could be how they get themselves prepared, whatever the case may be. You know, I do know the four you mentioned, they are all workaholics. They all know what they want to do. They all have a game plan. You know, Steven's been, you know, he's had a little bit of an injury bug, and that he has yet to really overcome that for a long period of time in his career, which has hurt him. His stuff is amazing for a left-hander. Plays great. He just has to stay healthy. You know, Syndergaard's had some ups and downs just for the fact that, you know, he has not been able to stay healthy for a full year. And, you know, I think sometimes the big thing he has to do is he just has to keep his mouth quiet, just keep on pitching. I think he has to just concern himself with on the field and let the other stuff take care of itself. Jacob's become just a superstar, in my opinion. I knew he had that in him the first day I met him in Savannah, you know, spring training. And then when I had him in Savannah, he's just a kid that knows who he is and continues to stay that way. He's true to who he is, and that's why he's the most successful of those guys. But, you know, I never had Zach Wheeler per se, but I will tell you one thing. His storyline is great. I mean, what he's done last year plus in finding himself after all the negatives he took in the New York press and everywhere else, I'm really happy to see him succeeding. And he finally found that off-speed pitch, the split finger that has helped make a difference in his career. And two, is now staying healthy and able to get the ball every 5 days. So I think that's why it's making him the pitcher he was always expected to be.
How about, Frank, it so happens Wheeler is in the same spot that you were in when your Met career ended, your final season with them. And what advice would you give Zach on handling a year in which your contract is going to be up at the end of the season and you could be looking at free agency? Talk about those distractions.
Well, first of all, you have to have a better second half than I did because I basically buried myself my second half of my last year of my contract. I had a terrible second half. They had to make a decision on Doc Gooden and myself, and they decided they went with Doc, and rightfully so. I had nobody to blame but myself. I think what you have to do is you can't worry about the press. You can't worry about anything. Control what you can control, and that's going out there every fifth day and give it the best you got. And I think Zach's doing that. I think he's got a good head on his shoulders. He's matured a lot, and I think he's going to be fine. And the big thing you have to realize is as bad of a second half as I had with the Mets, I signed a pretty nice free agent contract with the Red Sox following. So, I mean, you're not only pitching for the Mets, you're also pitching for every other team in baseball. If you go out there and take the ball every fifth day, in this day and age, you go 5, 6, 7 innings, you're going to be around for a long time, and that's what he's putting himself in a position to be able to do.
Well, you mentioned, Frank, finally, that your pitching coach this year for the first time with the High Point Rockers, a first-year team in the Independent Atlantic League. Of course, here in the New York area, we're familiar with the Long Island Ducks and the Somerset Patriots that have been perennial powers in that league. So how's that going so far?
Fantastic. You know, it's the first time I've been involved in independent ball. You know, the wonderful thing is I could be true to who I am. I could be myself. You don't have to listen to, and swallow your pride and teach things that you might necessarily not believe in yourself. You know, the organizational stuff, the analytics and stuff is fantastic, but it's not the end all, in my opinion, in the game today. And I think a lot of teams are pushing it too hard on kids and on others. And I think that, you know, there's a place, absolute place in baseball for that, but you also can't teach an analytical baseball the heart and the brains that these pitchers have. You know, you don't have to throw 97 to be successful. You could throw 87, 85 to be successful. You could command the strike zone, add and subtract, have some contrast on your pitches. That's what people don't realize. You know, analytics, it's, you know, launch angle, all this other stuff. And, you know what, there's so much more to it than that. But a lot of these guys who are teaching the analytics are the ones who haven't played the game either. So everybody's learning. Hopefully they'll find the midpoint where going forward they'll be able to use the analytics part but also have a baseball brain in place too so they can work together instead of separate.
And what do you do for fun as a former Long Islander in High Point, North Carolina? Tell me.
Actually, we moved. My wife and I, after 36 years in Orlando, Florida, which was our initial spring training base when we got married, we moved to North Carolina. My youngest daughter, Kaylee, who was a Division I volleyball player at Winthrop University, took a assistant coaching job at Davidson College for a couple of years. And that's outside of Charlotte in the Mooresville area and the Davidson area. And we got there, visited her, fell in love with the area, and we moved. So for 2 years now, we've been living in North Carolina and NASCAR country. And this New York accent with the NASCAR guys, it's a funny mix, but it's working.
So for sweet music, the music is just as sweet in Carolina.
So far, yeah, so far, so good. Thanks.
Well, we always love to hear the New York accent, Frank, especially from you. Great catching up with one of New York's own. Good luck this year with High Point. And once again, thanks for joining me here on Glad to Have Met You.
All right, Joey. Thank you. Appreciate it.